This is 4:55 on Monday, December 2nd.
Why are so many? Why are so few people here? Is that what you're asking? Why? Because they're slackers, I guess. There were more people here at 8 o'clock for 3:55 than there. You saw it was actually pretty good attendance in 3:55 today. Anyway, good morning. Why does it show me that? Thank you. All right. So, just to update on where we are, we are going to talk about IPsec today. We will talk about firewalls on Wednesday. On Friday, we'll do the final exam review. The proxy project is due Wednesday next week. We're going to talk about that here in a moment. The final exam is Monday next week at 8 o'clock in the morning, bright and early. Actually, I'm going to be here for that. I was thinking I wouldn't be, but I will be, at least for part of it. The proxy project. Yes. It's due on Wednesday, but you need to arrange to demonstrate it for the TA before you leave campus. Okay? So if you're planning to turn it in on Wednesday and run out the door, don't do that. You're going to have to turn it in sooner if you want to leave sooner. In any case, you'll need to demonstrate it for the TA by Friday. Yes?
Will you go through the last question for the chapter 8 work?
If I knew what it was, I could. I don't have it here in front of me. Do you have it?
No.
Anybody have it? Last question for chapter 8 homework. Do we know what, anybody know what that is? Well, let me talk about the proxy project. Maybe it will be done. Over the break, I got several queries about the proxy project, and I wanted to say a few things about it. So the queries often were of the form, my proxy works on the 3:55 website, but when I go to CNN, some of the images don't load. Or some of the images start to load and never finish. Or when I try to do a certain page on, you know, download a PDF file from your web page, it starts but never finishes. Is this okay? No, it's not. But let me tell you what I've found out in some investigations. The strategy that is outlined in the assignment of forcing a connection close header should work for all of these sites as far as loading everything that's coming. But not doing that is hard. I set myself the goal over the break of implementing a proxy that did not require connection close. So why does connection close work, and why is it hard to not use connection close. So what happens with a request? You get in your request, it says get this object, and the server comes back and it says here's the object and here's the length. That's one thing it can say. The content length header can be in there. And if you're trying to use that as the way that you know how much to read and forward, that will work as long as there's a content length header there. But there's another thing that the server can say that is really very troubling. So the server can say content length and then a decimal number. And then if you read that many bytes, you will have read everything and returned it to the client. But the other thing that the server can say is it cannot use a content length and instead say transfer encoding chunked. Okay? And this is a problem because when you read this header, you don't know how long it's going to be. So let me tell you about how chunked encoding works. So chunked encoding says that, so we get to the end of the headers, and there's the carriage return, new line, carriage return, new line, that marks the end of the headers, just in the usual way, and you presumably know how to handle that. But then comes a hex number. These are backslashes. A hex number, and then comes that hex number of bytes, followed by carriage return, a new line, and then comes another hex number, carriage return, a new line, and that hex number of bytes. Right, and that goes on until you get a zero followed by carriage return and a new line. Okay, so this repeats. This part repeats for as long as it wants to. Finally you get a zero, then you get some more headers, each followed by and finally you get a blank line. So this is kind of weird, right? That you should get headers after the content instead of before it. But the whole point of this encoding is that the server can start to send data without knowing how much data it's going to send. Okay, so maybe it's going to produce the data and it will only figure out at the end how much it has sent, and each time it sends some, it knows how much is in that piece that it sent, but eventually it gets to the end and it says fine, and then it can do some headers that maybe are a checksum over everything that it sent or something like that. So the headers that come here are things that could not have come beforehand. And then finally we're done. Okay? So this is fine, except that there's no content length there. And you sort of have to continuously parse what you're seeing here to find these hex number of byte numbers in order to know how many bytes to read next, and so on and so forth. And so this is a lot more complicated, right? So you could do this with connection close, a connection close header. You could sort of parse through this as you're going. But it turns out that it's much easier to just say, since I'm using connection close, I'll just read until I get an end of stream indication, and then I'm done. All right? And that's why I advocate using connection close. Once you use connection close, you can just read all this to the end of stream and forward it to the client, and everything will be happy. Okay? If you don't use connection close, however, you really do have to parse all this in order to find out how much to read, because remember, when you don't use connection close after this final carriage return new line here, you'll get more headers for a different response. That's what connection keep alive means, is that there can be more than one response in a single stream. So you can't read it to end of file. You have to read it. Because part of the assignment was to print out the response headers. So you have to find the response headers in the stream. All right. Okay. So that's one issue, is that if you're going to use connection keep alive, you have to parse these transfer chunked encoding streams. Another issue is that with connection keep alive, you really have to use some way of being able to read requests from the client and forward them to the server at the same time that you're reading responses from the server and forwarding those to the client. Okay? Whereas with connection close, you can read the request and then read the response. Read the request, read the response. Okay? So that's sort of a single thing going on at a time. It's either reading the request or reading the response. Now we need to be able to do both of them simultaneously. So what techniques do you know about for dealing with that? That's my question. For dealing with reading the requests and reading the responses essentially in an interleaved fashion. Okay, threading is one way, and select is the other way, right? Those two ways. I did my implementation with threading, and that worked. Okay, I ended up being happy that I had done that. If you're doing it with select, you sort of have to keep track in a single thread of both where you are in reading and forwarding the client stream, and at the same time keep track of where you are in reading and forwarding the stream coming back from the server. And finally, okay, so that's one choice that you have to make if you're going to do connection keep alive. And finally, the other problem that is now posed here is that you have the problem that whenever you do a read on a socket, you don't really know you know how many bytes you've got, but you don't know how the number of bytes that you got actually overlays on this. Let's see if I can do something here. Grab a highlighter. So, not that. So suppose that I've done a read on a socket or a receive on a socket. It might just end there at any arbitrary point in this stream. There's no synchronization between the receives that you do on a TCP stream and the actual content of the stream. So if you're in the middle of, if you've said, okay, I'm reading this many bytes and I read this many bytes, then I need to go on because I need to find another carriage return and new line and what comes after it. On the other hand, suppose that instead of that, it had read up to here. Okay? So I said, read this many bytes. I read that many bytes. Good. So that carriage returned a new line. But now I just have this hex number sitting in the buffer. And I have to do another read in order to finish getting the information I need. Right? I might even be in the middle of the hex number. So at every stage here, you have to be keeping track of how far, how many bytes you have actually consumed out of the buffer, as well as how many you have left over that are going to be part of. And you've probably dealt with this to a certain extent, even with the connection keep a lot, connection close approach. But remember, you have to do that. But it just gets worse when you're having to deal with this thing as well. Okay? So, bottom line is, it should work on CNN. Okay? You should be able to read all of the stuff that's on CNN. If it hangs on an image, you probably have like an off by one error or something. People said, well, it seemed to not work on the compressed images, G-zipped images or something. That would be an indication that, in fact, the client never got the whole thing and was unable to proceed to decompress it, for example. So, there's lots of opportunity in here for off-by-one mistakes. I've made many of them in making my connection keep alive proxy. There's opportunities to and there's opportunities with the buffer to end up not actually having the buffer everything that continues after it, but only one character. I did that at one point. Possibility of not consuming some of the buffer and forgetting that you actually consumed it, so you feed it back to the client again. Client doesn't like that very well. Client, like Firefox or Chrome, will survive all of this garbage that you're feeding it. It just may not show you what you expect to see on the web page. Okay? So, yeah. It was quite a story. I worked on it over a period of several days. Not for several days, but over a period of several days. And I came to the conclusion that really, if I were to require you to support Connection Keep Alive, it would be way too hard a project. So Connection Close is definitely the way to go, as far as I'm concerned, unless somebody else has a cleverer way to do this, but I don't know it. Okay? So that was my experience and just a bit of what I encountered. Now the other thing that you need to support is POST. POST has a little bit of this flavor of you need to read the headers and get the content length out of it. Remember, a POST is something going from the client, is data being sent in the body of the request from the client to the server. Again, connection close is the way to go. Content length you can read. There's a... The one thing that I should send this out to the whole class. There's a web page at the World Wide Web Consortium, I think it is, that has a form on it that you can submit to. It doesn't do anything, but that's what you need for testing your post and just making sure that you get back, that you're able to process everything and get it back. So I will try to remember to send out that link, and if I don't remember, would somebody take it on themselves to remind me at the point when they need it? Okay, I will do that. Okay, Any questions about any of this? Any experiences with the proxy that anybody wants to relate? Yes, Eileen.
I've experienced all of those.
All of those bugs. Okay.
Until I fix all of them.
Until you fix all of them, it does not work very well, right? But you can get clues from the headers that you're seeing about what might be wrong. Like if the things that it's printing out as headers don't actually look like headers, that's an indication of sort of an alignment problem. I certainly went through that. Did you have any success in finding the...
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I will try to write it so that I can refer to it.
It says, problem 25 says, provide a filter table and a connection table. For a stateful firewall that is restrictive, that is as restrictive as possible. A stateful firewall.
That is as restrictive as possible.
That accomplishes the following.
I think we don't need to go on past that probably. But let's see. As possible and accomplishes the following.
And there's three parts. The first one just says allows all internal users to establish telnet sessions with external hosts.
Internal to external telnet. Okay.
The second one is allows users to search the company website at 22.22.22.22.22.12.
Company website. Okay.
And the third one is but otherwise blocks all inbound and outbound traffic.
Okay, so what was the question about this? This was your question, so, Michael.
I think I did. I was looking at 36 and 35.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right. Yeah. Right. Okay. If there's still confusion, email me.
All right.
Let's do that. Okay. So then we're going to talk about IPsec. All right. So just to review. We had come through, we had talked about sort of the cryptographic principles, message integrity. We talked about authenticating and encrypting email at the application layer. We had talked about security using TLS at the TCP transport layer. And now we're going to talk about network security based on IPsec, which operates at the network layer. Okay? That's the roadmap. All right. So, the advantage of doing things at the network layer, of course, is that you can protect anything that travels between two hosts. It doesn't have to be something associated with a particular TCP connection. Anymore. It can be TCP, UDP, whatever. You know, everything that goes between the hosts will be potentially protected. And it can be hidden and authenticated. And so, in some sense, this is good because it is, as they say, blanket coverage. It's potentially bad because it's really only between particular points, and each IPsec session, if you will, has to be set up between two particular hosts, and so it's not terribly convenient to use, for example, when you're surfing the web. so SSL TLS is better for that. But this can be used to set up what are called virtual private networks. So the idea is that you set up your own network traveling over a public network, but in such a way that nobody can actually understand your traffic. Logically separate from other traffic. So that's true to a certain extent, right? The others cannot see your traffic, cannot see inside your traffic, but they certainly can become aware of your traffic, right? It uses resources on the network, and your traffic has IP headers on it that others can potentially look at. So sort of the meta information can be collected. That's how the NSA starts out, is collecting the meta information. Once they know how to do that successfully, then they try to look inside. So what happens, this blue cloud up here says public internet in unreadable white. The good thing is that we can protect all of the traffic for a whole network using IPsec if the routers are the things that implement the IPsec layer. We don't have to rely on all of the individual hosts to do it the way we do with TLS. We can implement IPsec on individual hosts, but again, the configuration issues are fairly daunting. So it's much more common to see router-to-router VPNs than end-to-end VPNs. WSU's network used to support VPNs for individual clients out in the world that wanted to connect back to WSU. I don't think it does anymore, or at least they don't advertise it. It was always very clumsy to use. And it gets very complicated, and I'll try to show you why. Well, I'll talk about why right now. So you have your laptop out in the world. You're sitting in a hotel. You're wanting to connect to WSU securely using IPsec. What about the other things that you want to do with your laptop while you're in the hotel? Watch Netflix or something, right? You don't want that traffic coming back to WSU, right? So you don't want to make this an exclusive tunnel for the laptop to WSU. You want it configured to only handle the traffic that's going to WSU. And we'll talk about that, about how that's done in what the technology is for supporting that, but the sort of outside stuff, the people processes for that get kind of complicated. Okay? So what does it provide? It provides data integrity and authentication. It prevents replay attacks, provides confidentiality using two different service models. One is called authentication header, and it only provides integrity and authentication, and this one's called encrypting security payload, I think. It says later. Both of these also come in two different flavors, called transport mode, and the other is called tunneling mode, and has to do with the ability to have IP hosts. This is tunneling mode, and having the host be IPsec aware is. Sorry, this is tunneling mode. I think it's backwards. This is tunneling mode, and this is transport mode. Okay, so mean, there's a lot of terminology here, and just try to get the concepts, right? That's what we're after. And the fact that there are, encapsulation security protocol. The fact that there are two varieties of this is because there were different use cases, right? And so the IETF set out to support both use cases. Authentication header is relatively lightweight. Doesn't require the processing required for encryption, but ESP is more secure and provides So tunnel mode with ESP is the one that we're going to talk about. Alright, so remember that I said one of these IPsec things is operating between two hosts. Maybe router and router, or it may be router and client machine, or two client machines, doesn't matter. It's operating between two hosts, and the information for sending from one host to the other host of that pair is called a security association. It's a one-way thing. It says data going from here to there is handled by this particular security association. Again, it's a technical term in the standard. The hosts at the ends have to maintain state information about the security association. Okay. IPsec is connection oriented, sort of in the sense that TCP is. It's connection oriented in that the endpoints are aware of the connection. The stuff in the middle is not. And so, looking back to where to go? Looking back to this picture, the question is, how many security associations will this router have to maintain if it's supporting the branch office and N roaming laptops? Anybody want to hazard a guess? No, nobody wants to hazard a guess. Just two for this, and two more for each of those laptops. Okay. So what goes into a security association? An identifier, just a number, the two endpoints, the type of encryption, the type of integrity check, the authentication key, and what isn't listed here is the state of the connection, right? The sequence number that is part of the payload. Okay, so computer science, sometimes I get frustrated. Security association state is held in a security association database. Well, I would have called it a table. because it really has nothing to do with Oracle or relational databases or anything like that. It's a table. And so when you're sending something, you have to look up in the security association database the appropriate security association for the particular packet you have in hand, and choose the information for how you encrypt, how you authenticate, and so forth. And when something arrives, it actually contains the index that you're supposed to use from your security association database. So what does it do? This is the T typical thing of encapsulation or tunneling, right? You take an original, IP packet, you tack on some stuff at the end, you tack on some stuff at the beginning, and you send it through IP. It's just this is the, you know, one of the big ideas from this class, right, is encapsulation. The encapsulation here is a little more complicated than some of the others that we've seen, in that we add something after the original packet, then we encrypt that whole thing, and then we add something else, the authentication trailer, and an ESP header, and that whole thing gets authenticated, and finally the whole thing gets sent in a new IP packet. So, more details. What's the purpose of the sequence number here? What security purpose does the sequence number serve? Not so much nothing can be inserted. Nothing can be replayed. Right? That's typically why you have a sequence number. So the client, the receiving endpoint needs to keep track of what sequence numbers it's seen and reject things that have already been received, because you could really confuse things. Remember, this can be any IP in here, like it could be UDP, and sending multiple UDP packets is not a nice thing. Okay, so you wouldn't want to do that. TCP would deal with it, right? TCP would deal gracefully with duplicate packets, but UDP, it would depend on the application protocol whether it was graceful or not, and you don't want to count on that. So they designed it so that there's a sequence number here. Why is it called an enchilada? I guess because instead of just sticking something on one end, you stick it on both ends, and that gives you a sense of having wrapped up the contents. I don't know. But it does allow them to it does allow them to make puns like creates an authentication over the whole enchilada. One of the things I do appreciate about computer science is that there is a sense of humor sometimes. But I think that we're sort of seeing that here. Okay. So we didn't talk very much about it, about block and stream ciphers, but block ciphers are ciphers that only operate on fixed size numbers of bits, and so maybe there aren't enough bits to fill up a whole block here, so you need some padding for the block cipher. We talked about sequence numbers, keeping a window, so that it would be very inconvenient if the design of the protocol required the receiver to keep track of every sequence number it had ever seen, right? That would be an infinite storage requirement. We wouldn't like that. But instead, we'll say that the receiver keeps track of sequence numbers back a certain distance. Anything older than that is certainly going to be rejected, and things newer than that are going to be accepted. Part of the problem, of course, is that the whole enchilada is being sent as an IP packet. And IP packets can be what? Dropped, reordered. Okay? So IPsec has to be prepared to deal with that. Okay. Another database defined is part of this. How do you know which association to use for a particular packet? That's the job of the SPD, and this is where we have to solve that problem of, I'm sitting at the hotel with my laptop VPN'd to WSU, and which traffic is going to go to WSU and which traffic is going to go directly out on the network. So this has got to be, you know, technically the mechanism for doing this is not hard, right? It's just a table that says which traffic goes where. The hard question is which traffic should go to each of those places. And that's where people have to get involved, and then people get involved and it starts to be overwhelming. Okay, so using ESP and IPsec, Trudy is blocked from seeing anything about the original IP packet, right? It's an IP packet that's been encapsulated here. She can't change it. She can't masquerade as the router because she doesn't have the keys. And so things are pretty well protected, but the administrative overhead of making this work is challenging. The IKE protocol, Internet Key Exchange, is involved in providing the information to the endpoints that they need in order to set up these security associations. So remember, for a security association, you need some keys. Where are they going to come from? Okay, that's what IKE is about. What does it do? It, first of all, authenticates the endpoints as part of the beginning of the IKE protocol, right? You need to know who you're talking to. Once you've done that, you can set up keys that let you continue to know who you're talking to. But to get started, you either need a pre-shared secret or some certificates. Oh, terrible typo. Okay, we'll fix that one too. Okay, so pre-shared key is symmetric key based. You have a key, I have a key, nobody else has the key, we know who each other are. Okay. PKI, I have a public key, I have your public key and a certificate that says it's your public key. I have my private key, you have mine. Okay. Same deal. Not anything theoretically difficult. It's just all in parsing the messages and knowing what's up. Okay. I don't want to go through this. So, IKE to get things set up, and then AH or ESP. To provide authentication and encryption, and it works between routers, between end systems. Okay, you saw the pictures. All right. Next time, I think we're going to skip this and talk about firewalls and intrusion detection systems. I think that will be more. We may touch on a few things here about wireless LANs, but that's not going to be the main focus. We'll talk about IDS instead. Okay? Any other questions? No takers on questions. All right. Have a good Monday, Tuesday, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
That's all it'll be 7 degrees when you go to class.
Oh yes, on Wednesday. It's gonna be darn cold.
Yeah, it's 3 degrees, but not.